football is all a matter of opinion. Share yours. 01514720967. It's the Legends on Radio City and Radio City Talk.
Good evening. It's 6:30 on a Thursday evening. I've got a brand new name for this show. It's called the Radio City Legend. Because we can't even get two legends at the moment. Sharpie's always is in. Good evening, Sharpie.
Good evening, Steve.
We had a Mark Lawrenson until about 2 hours ago when a crisis happened. And Lauro couldn't make it. So we rang around. And it's late in the day, isn't it? Anyway, we've got a couple on the phone. We were talking about him the other day. Stevie Nicol.
Yeah.
That should be interesting, shouldn't it?
He's tired, isn't he? He's going to be a week.
Yeah, I think he's got a bit of jet lag.
Has he?
But he'll be in his hotel room, but he might just have the requisite bag of crisps.
And a few beers, yeah.
Stevie Nicol's going to join us on the phone, and also just after seven as well, Ray Houghton. Reason. So, I tell you, it's not on, though, is it, the Reds?
Poor. You know, when I was playing a charity golf today, and Roy Evans was there, so Roy would have been there. Just as I left the course, he was enjoying himself with a pint of lager, so he could have come around with us.
I know where I'd rather be. let's talk about some of the big stories of the day. Both Ronald Koeman and Jurgen Klopp have been doing their press conferences ahead of the weekend. So for Everton, it's a trip to Sunderland to face an Everton B team by the look of what David Moyes is putting together.
Yeah, Moyes has gone in there. You know, I don't think he's endeared himself to the Sunderland fans by talking it's going to be another relegation scrap for him. But I think he's been totally honest. You know, I think Sunderland have been down there. I think it will take time to change the mentality of the football club. Whether they give David Moyes that time, we'll just have to wait and see. But certainly he's brought in Pienaar, a good addition for me. I think he's a good player. Okay, he's getting on a little bit, but an intelligent player. But it'll be a tough trip up there. It's never easy. He'll always want to put one over in Everton. Everton want to put one over in him. And each of he's gone up there as well, but I don't think he's fit enough to play at this moment in time, which I can't believe. That I've spoken about this boy for many a year now, and I'll never forget the time when I trained the academy, and there was Iniesta and Vaughan, and they asked me who did I think had the better chance, and I said after watching him training and training with him for a couple of days, I said Vaughan, and they went, well, it's a surprise, because I said let me tell you, Vaughan's attitude is top drawer. He wants to be the best. He wants. He says the other fella, not for me. Not his attitude's not right. Now I speak to people at West Brom now, Tony Brown, who's a famous centre-forward for West Brom, and he reiterates everything I say. He was pulling his hair out, you know, when he went down to West Brom for 3 years down there. Then, I mean, you think that 3 years ago he was for, I think, £7 million West Brom paid for him, and Sunderland have taken him on the free. Last chance saloon for me, because nobody else was going to take him, only because Moyes got the job at Sunderland and was desperate for forwards. He thought, I'll take a chance in Iniesta.
And what do you mean? Is it attitude? Is that
all day problem? Long? All yeah. day long for all day long for me. I've said it from the word go. Speak to people who've seen him as well. He's got all the attributes. He's built like a heavyweight boxer. But when it doesn't go his way, he spits his dummy out. So I think attitude is a big part to play. And you know, he's very fortunate boy to get another Premier League club.
I think it's interesting the way David Moyes has gone for former players. I understand Premier League managers who just move immediately to another Premier League club and take a player with them. But he's gone for players that, you know, he had within his group a few years ago.
Yeah, I think if you look at the Sunderland fans and you ask them, they probably wouldn't be too happy. You know, Pienaar would probably come to the end of his career. I still think he's been a fantastic footballer, Stephen. But I think they'd be wanting a little bit more. You know, I think they'd be wanting younger models rather than people who have kind of played out their time at Everton and elsewhere. So I think there'll be a little bit of sense of disappointment. I tell you what David Moyes will have. He'll have his team well set up and it'll be difficult to break down. And then the same as he was at Everton at the beginning, you know, he'll take a point. He'll nick three if he can do. So I don't expect Sunderland to be, you know, open football. I think they'll be behind the ball, make it difficult for Everton. So I think it could be a tough night for us.
Okay, you can give us a call throughout the course of the hour, 01514720967. Quite a few of you already want to get on the show, 01514720967. Just some headlines from the Liverpool press conference today. And Jurgen Klopp says it will take time for Mamadou Sakho to make a return to the first team fold at Liverpool. but he's saying he does not need to regain his trust. So all sorts of rumours going out, around about Mamadou Sakho as to whether he's been sort of frozen out, whether completely fallen out with the manager. The manager today has just delivered a fairly sort of tranquil press conference and said, no, he, you know, if he's fit enough and he can come back into the side.
Well, the thing is, Steve, is he fit enough? How's he going to get his fitness? He's only going to get fitness by playing games. You know, and you know, if he's not playing and not featuring, I think it's very rare they're playing the under-21s or whatever. So, you know, it's important to get fit, and he's not going to get fit unless he plays. So I can understand the manager saying he's not fit enough. It's down to Sakho to knuckle down in training and get a big impression on Klopp and see that he's working extremely hard to get in. He may have to start in the bench and then from there start. But it doesn't look right there, does it? You know,
there's something that, underneath it all, isn't it, that smells.
Think, yeah, and we're probably, I hope we're wrong kind of thing, but I think when you cross your manager, and I think somebody of Klopp's stature as well, it's very difficult to get back on board. But for him to get back on board, he needs to work extremely hard and just get his head down, work hard in training and hopefully wait for a chance.
And as you said, I mean, Sakho hasn't played since the Merseyside derby in April. Mm-hmm. So we're talking months and months he scored in that one. But of course, he had that suspension for taking that fat burner, was cleared of all that. But look, you can't play for that long.
No, you can't. But what was the situation? Remind me, did he refuse to go out on loan or did something not happen?
Well, Liverpool indicated that it'd be a good thing for him to go out on loan. And from what we heard, not from the horse's mouth, but that Mamadou basically said, you know, I don't want to go to somewhere like Stoke. So all of a sudden, transfer window shuts. Yeah. Whether he had an inclination that he could still get back in the side. And then there was all these rumours about, well, he's not been given a squad number, but he is in the squad.
Yeah.
There's too much that the mud sticks a little bit, doesn't it?
But as a player there, Steve, surely to goodness, if you, as you say, you haven't played since the drug issue, whatever kind of thing, you need to get your fitness. So if you're not going to get your fitness in the first team, you're going to be on the periphery of the first team, surely you need to go out and get games under your belt, go out and loan. Surely that's common sense. He's not doing himself any favour by just sitting there and not getting match fit.
Okay, someone else who won't be playing at the weekend, of course, the opening of Liverpool's new stand, Emre Can. Still got a little issue with his ankle. So he's unavailable for Liverpool against Leicester City. And what will be? It will, come on, Shop. It's a momentous day, isn't it? You open your new main stand. You can see it from Goodison.
It is, but you haven't got any dressing rooms, have you? Are the dressing rooms ready yet? Or you haven't even have a porter cabin?
It takes time to do these
things. So you mean to say you're putting teams in porter cabins?
A couple of porter cabins.
Oh, my goodness,
there.
That sounds like Wimbledon. Wimbledon used to do that.
Possibly. Was that the worst thing possible?
Porter cabins were a nightmare, an absolute nightmare. It'll be different nowadays because no doubt the porter cabins that Liverpool have will be like 5-star and everything.
No, I've been in them.
They're not.
It's just literally a bog standard environment.
Oh my
goodness. Walked into it thinking, oh, I'm going to see something amazing here. And it was literally just sort of quite a white, sanitised room inside an air-conditioned porter cabin. There's no frills to it whatsoever.
So Liverpool's slightly better than the opposition's?
Slightly bigger. Not that that's going to make much of a difference. And actually, the walk from the porter cabin to the pitch, I shouldn't call it a porter cabin, the changing room
porter cabin.
To the pitch, takes forever. I think the players will be thinking, what is this?
So where are the changing rooms in?
So basically, if you go to Anfield now and go down towards the Anfield Road end and you're coming off Stanley Park and there's a lovely big area in which you can drive down into a player's tunnel. It's almost like Arsenal or Wembley.
Okay.
You drive underneath the stadium.
All right. Okay.
So the bus goes in there so all the fans can greet the bus.
Yeah.
And of course, the Liverpool fans have been great, haven't they, in sort of recent matches in doing that, sort of greeting the bus. So they'll be able to do that in an even better environment.
Okay.
Bus drives down. Get out, get into the porter cabin, get changed, and they've got to walk all the way through. But I still think there's quite a bit of internal work to be done in that stadium.
No, it's certainly something that you don't miss, do you? You know the size of it. No, it'd be great. And again, how many more? 8,000 more?
Well, it's 54,000 the capacity.
Right.
So I think was it 44 or something like 12,000?
Right. Okay.
Something like that. It looks great. Although a lot's been made today on social media of some obstructed views. Because
I was going to say it'd be interesting to hear what the punters say after the game. So it'd be interesting next week get some of them on who have sat in the new seats just to see what it was like, what the atmosphere was like, what the view was like. Because I've heard myself. There are some obstructed views where
just
maybe not
obstructed,
but you can't see the pitch.
just you can't
a good
see
thing.
One side.
Maybe Liverpool will be the last few years, it was a good thing.
Right, we are going to talk in a moment or two. Dave's just trying to get through to his hotel room. He's
be
shaking
sleeping.
His head furiously about this.
I'm telling you, he'll be sleeping.
Do you think so?
Stevie Nicol will be sleeping.
He's blaming the hotel staff now. We're going to have a short break and then we'll take some of your calls and we'll also catch up with Steve Nicol. Stay there.
This is the home of red and blue banter and debate. Call now 0151 472 0967. It's the Legends. On Radio City and Radio City Talk.
6:44, no Aldo tonight. Was meant to be Loro. Loro pulled out at late notice. Don't worry, it was the Radio City legend, which was Graham Sharp, but we can double that now. And sitting in his hotel room and waiting for us is Steve Nicol. Evening to you, Steve.
Hey, boys, how you doing?
Hi, Steve, boy. You okay, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm going to time how long it takes you to ask me a certain question. Let's see if you do it.
Me? I'm not going to ask you a certain question. What would that be?
I'll remind you later on in the interview.
All right, okay. As long as it's safe.
Oh, no, you're all right. It's kosher.
Steve, is it one that other interviewees would not ask you? Is it something that only Sharpie would know?
Oh, aye. Absolutely. Is it?
100%. Come on, Sharpie.
I don't know.
Rack your brain.
I don't know.
Tell him cup final. Tell him cup final.
Cup final.
Oh, yeah, it was a penalty. It was a penalty.
It was. It was
See,
a penalty.
He's admitting it. He's admitting after all these years, it was a penalty.
Oh, yeah. Goodness.
Actually, I've just had a call from the FA. They're going to replay the game because it should have been a penalty.
Right.
Look, you're back on Merseyside, aren't you, with the launch of your new book, your autobiography, five league titles and a packet of crisps. It's taken you a long time to write your autobiography, hasn't it, Steve?
Well, it has because, you know, particularly at Liverpool, everything was in-house. It was keep your mouth closed, you know, don't tell anybody anything. It was all, you know, keep talking, but don't tell anybody anything. And then when I became a head coach, it was kind of, I had the same thoughts as well, you know, keep everything in-house. It was only really when I started working at ESPN full-time that it was basically a role reversal. It had to be the complete opposite. You know, you're analysing teams and players. You have to be open and you have to be honest. And that just sort of triggered something. And then I decided to go ahead and do the book.
Stevie, would you not think of going back and doing the managing thing? Is that you finished? Are you just going to do the punditry now?
Do you know, it's such a great job to get up in the morning and go and watch games of football and just give your opinion. Mm. I mean, when you're the head coach, you're in charge of not just the team and the squad, but probably the backup staff, you know, the media. I mean, you're in charge of all of that. You've got an input into all of that. Mm. And it kind of wears you down after a while. Mm. You know, I spent 10 years at New England Revolution, and by the end, I was frazzled.
Yeah,
I was on blood pressure tablets, and, you know, 2 weeks after they got the bullet, I was off them. Mm. And then I end
That's no coincidence.
And then I end up at ESPN, and it's such a good job, and they actually pay me to do it as well, so that's fantastic.
I tell you, but I'm surprised you're not in blood pressure tablets on ESPN when you're talking with Craig Burley and people like that. Deary me.
I've got rid of the tablets, I've turned to the other stuff.
It's slightly different when you watch punditry in America, isn't it? It's sort of a different feel to the whole thing. You've got quite a few crazy characters over there on the football coverage, Steve.
Well, I think compared to when I watch shows over here or over in Great Britain, they want you to be totally honest and have no problem with whatever you say. It's just about being open and honest. I don't get that impression when I watch shows from the UK that people are honest and open. You know, we like to mix it up. We're certainly direct, but we like to have a bit of fun. We like an argument. Mm. So there's kind of a bit of everything, which I personally think that's what people want to watch. They don't want some sort of staged conversation that has no controversy. Not that we try and invent controversy, but you know, you like to hear somebody having a real strong, straightforward, honest opinion.
Mm. Let's talk about your book. Let's get into a few stories.
Well, have to?
Sharpie picked up your book straight away because he was looking for the picture of himself.
Well, you must have given him it because there's no way he's buying it.
Yeah, no,
he didn't buy it. But he found the picture quite quickly of himself in it.
Only in the world. The only game I played, the World Cup, Mexico. Stevie played a few more. But no,
allegedly.
Yeah. But no, Steve, I'm going to ask you, we're going to talk about quickly, but very, the MLS, is it improving or is it that set a standard now that you don't think it will improve?
You know, when people say, is it improving? I think where I usually end up going is, like, what is your middle guy? How good is your middle guy? Because when you sign Steven Gerrard and you sign Pirlo and Lampard, obviously they're great players.
Yeah.
So that's going to improve any team. Yes. But where is your actual middle guy? Where's that guy who's, you know, 9th, 10th in the pecking order? How good is he? And the honest truth is, it's not improved because there are more players involved in the league. There are 23 teams in the league. There are squads of 30. I mean, do the maths. You're talking about 600 players. Listen, we couldn't turn around in the space of 10 years and find 600 players of a high quality to play in England. Never mind the US. So the whole thing round the MLS is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
The crowds are incredible. The atmosphere at games are incredible. But if you really want to be honest and blank, your average guy isn't better today, I would suggest, than maybe 6, 7, 8 years ago.
No, it's taken a while to improve then. Look, let's talk about a few of your stories here. I've got a text in from someone already who said, please ask Steve, and you've done a piece or a chapter about your love of crisps in the book. Does he think with his diet then and sports science now, this is from Robbie, would he be able to play now? Or would you get caught out fitness-wise? Because you had a bit of a love of bad food. Is that fair enough? Bad food and drink? Is that fair, Sharpie?
Well, everybody did in those days.
Okay, well, I'm treading carefully. Yeah. Was it a love of crisps in particular for you, Steve?
100%, absolutely. They were fantastic. Yeah. Are you kidding me? Well, I never carried an ounce of weight when I was playing. Because, you know, whatever I did have, your bags of crisps, then I worked hard and I sweated it out. And all these, there's nothing to stop anybody today going into training, doing all these tests, doing all this, eating all this nonsense, and then going home, shutting the door, and then getting loafed in to a bag of crisps. they haven't started putting cameras in players' houses yet, have they?
Would you get caught out in this day and age or not?
But no, if you're performing on a Saturday.
No? Okay, no. I'm only asking Robbie's question here. You know, he wanted to know.
No, not at all. You know, and again, I always go back. Something really important to me was, you know what? When I went into training and when I played, I worked hard. And I think when you work hard and you give everything, there has to be some sort of release. And so, in my opinion, I think one helps the other. If I go in and work hard every day and I'm playing hard, whether it's 30 years ago or whether it's today, there has to be some sort of release. So the two go hand in hand. And if mine is having a bag of crisps and a pint of beer, then guess what? Who's going to get the benefit of that? I'm going to get the benefit, but the club and the team are going to get the benefit. I mean, you can spin things 100,000 ways if you want to.
Sharpie, what was your vice?
Crisp as well.
Must
be a Scottish thing, yeah. It's unbelievable. When I was in Diggs, my landlady bought me a box.
Of Walkers?
Yeah, pickled onion, yeah.
Pickled cards.
Yeah.
It's probably the only one I don't like.
Is that right? Oh, no.
Got another one here from Tony in Norris Green, who says, how did you handle missing that penalty in the European Cup final, being so young?
I'll tell you, to be honest with you, at the time I wanted to stick my head in a hole and keep it there. But what really surprised me more than anything was that having missed it and thinking you're going to get pelters forever, people actually came up to me and actually were applauding me was the wrong word, but people were actually impressed that at the young age I was that I actually stood up and put myself in the firing line. And that gave me a huge amount of confidence. because I thought the opposite would happen. I thought I would be getting slagged and this and that. But people actually took it the other way and actually turned it into a positive, the fact that I actually stood up and was there to be counted and to be fired at. And that helped me enormously.
I mean, your teammates saved you, didn't they? You did a little thing afterwards, though, didn't you, where you were you're holding your own neck or something, and Kenny kept rubbing that in your face, didn't he?
Every now and again in training, he used to start giving it all that, whistling and touching his throat and just trying to wind me up. But
you were the victim. What sort of player was he, Sharpie?
Oh, he was a different class. I remember when he first came down, he had that famous picture, Steve, with a size 13 feet, if you remember, right with the boots. But he was at Air United, I think he just started to rack him down.
13 feet? Yeah. They're not 13, yeah. Are they?
Yeah, they were when he signed, but he was a fabulous player. Right back, could play anywhere. Tough, competitive, score a goal, quick. Despite all the Chris and the lager and everything else, it didn't affect him. He's still quick up and down that pitch. But you talk to any Liverpool, I'm not just saying that Steve's on now, but you talk to any Liverpool player, a fan at that time, he was top draw, top player.
Did you not mind that utility thing, Steve? The fact that you were put in a whole load of positions?
I didn't mind doing the playing anywhere. I just hate the word utility. To me, it sounds like a jack of all trades, master of none. That's when I hear that word. It's not my favourite word, but hey, listen, I just wanted to put a red jersey on, and if you asked me to go in goals, I would have done it as well.
That was it. That was the thing in those days. You just wanted to play. You trained because you wanted to play, and you trained hard because you wanted to be in that side in the Saturday. And if the manager said to you, "I want you to do this," you would go and do it, and that's what you want. It wouldn't be throwing the dummies out at the pram because you're not in your favourite position. You got a shot. You went out and played. Made sure he kept that shot for the following game, and he did that. Liverpool were a fantastic team in those days, absolutely brilliant.
I'm sure as well, Sharpie, that team, that fantastic team that you had at one stage, people would think you just know your names on the team sheet, and I'm sure your boys were the same. You know, whenever I listened to the team being read out, the only thing I was listening to was my name on it, and this, you're talking, you know, having been a regular for 2, 3, or 4 seasons, that little thing inside you is still waiting to make sure that you were in the team. You were never complacent because there was too many good players around you that if you didn't perform, you weren't playing. So I'm sure you lot were the same as us.
Yeah.
What about Liverpool now then? What are your thoughts on this season, Stevie, and what he's got at his disposal, Jurgen Klopp?
Do you know what? I don't think you need to be a genius to kind of figure out what's going on at Liverpool right now. I think on the one hand, they've got the ability to score goals for fun. Unfortunately, on the other end, they've got the ability to ship them in. So I think it's pretty clear. I don't think you need to be an expert in football to figure that one out, that if Liverpool can stop the ball going on the other end, they're going to score enough goals to win games down the other side.
Do you think, Steve, they've got enough on that to get in the top four?
I would love to turn around after point one of a second and say absolutely, but that's not the case. I think, no question, defensively, they're vulnerable. They have problems. We all know about the left-back situation. I think Matip showed against Tottenham that he can be a great player in that back four. But I'm not sure as a unit they're strong enough to get us in the top four. I certainly hope so. I'm sure Jurgen and the rest of his coaching staff between now and the end of the season are going to be figuring that one out and figuring a way of making that happen. But unless Liverpool can stop them going in at the other end, then it's going to be really tough to get in the top four.
You obviously did the management thing over there in the States. Was there ever a point where you were sort of having the ambition and thoughts that maybe that could lead to a management role at Anfield, Stevie?
Do you know, there's a thing today that regardless of who you are, what you've done, whatever, unless you've got a little piece of paper that says UEFA written on it, no matter how good or how bad you are, you ain't coaching anywhere in Europe. So I was never in the running for anything. And I can't imagine Bob Paisley. I can't imagine Kenny. You know, there's a whole host of managers who never had a piece of paper with writing on it that would have made any difference to what they did. So for me, that was never it was a non-starter straight away. So any sort of ambition, as far as that was concerned, was never going to happen.
Spot on. You know, we've said it for time and time again. Now I'm looking at all the publicity the Welsh are getting now with the licensed courses down there. Henri's just getting the assistant manager job at Belgium. The people that went through there, Arteta's at Manchester City now, and they've all got to take these A badges.
Do you need it in America? Is that how it works over there as well?
Does it,
Steve? No, you have to have certain licences. Mm-hmm. It's not quite reached that stage. And don't get me wrong, the licences are fantastic. I think there's no question, 100%, that you can learn a lot doing the licences. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it should be the be-all and end-all. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the point I'm trying to make. It should not mean somebody doesn't get a job. Can you imagine Brian Clough? He would never have passed a licence in his life. He would have told them all to shove it exactly where. But you know what? So I just don't believe it should be the be-all and end-all.
What would Howard? Would Howard have passed his
Yeah, I think Howard was a coach and done the Lillishaw thing as well. I think he was. I think he'd done that when he retired as a player and got all the badges. But it's right, you know, you look at it now, and for any young coaches, you know, who want to get in there, it's expensive as well. You know, it's some of the elite, it's easy enough for them. You know, they get it funded for them. But some of the young guys who aren't, you know, top footballers, who want to go down that road, find it very, very difficult because it's so expensive.
We obviously discussed sort of various memories that you've got there. The book's out. Is it out today, tomorrow? When's it released, Stevie?
You can actually get the book today. So it's out as of today. The official launch is tomorrow. But if you're that way inclined, I'm sure Sharpie got no intentions of getting involved in that. But if you want to, Sharpie, you can get yourself online and get it.
Online? What's that?
He's taken my copy already. He just whisked it off
me. I've got a copy here. Don't worry about that, mate.
You've never read a book in your... I see Alan Hansen did your forward. Was there only one choice for that?
No, not at all. Listen, I was fortunate that there were two or three people that I could have asked, but you know, Big Al was somebody who, both on and off the field, I mean, helped me hugely, and he wound me up remorselessly as well.
I bet you did.
So you know, I just thought he was perfect from every angle you could think of. I just thought, you know what, he would be great. And And fortunately for me, he was good enough to do it as well.
I'm just reading it very quick, the acknowledgements. And lastly, to Kenny, Big Al and Sui, thanks for taking the Michael.
Steve, thank you very much indeed for your time.
Cheers, Nicol.
Cheers, Sharpie.
Cheers.
There you go, there's Steve Nicol. He'll also be a guest tomorrow morning on Radio City Talk from 8 till 8:30. A bit of a character, isn't he?
Yeah, brilliant. Great lad.
That
great
book
lad.
Looks funny as well. Right, we will take some of your calls. It's a couple of minutes past 7 o'clock. It's the Radio City legend again, because it's just Sharpie. But we'll talk in the next half hour with some of you guys out there, 0151 472 0967, and also Ray Houghton.
This is the home of red and blue banter and debate. Call now, 0151 472 0967. It's the Legends. On Radio City and Radio City Talk.
7 minutes past 7 o'clock. We are going to get some of your calls in. Lovely outside at the moment. What an evening here on Merseyside. Myself and Sharpie, all those away playing golf. Laura, hope you're okay. Called off at late notice. But nice to hear from your mate Stevie Nicol there. And you've robbed my book now. You're determined to read this, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. No, he does. I'm glad he's came on here and admitted it was a penalty all those years ago. It just clears that up again. We were robbed yet again.
Isn't it funny how you weren't even thinking about it?
I wasn't.
It was the first thing that was on his mind, wasn't it? Bit of honesty. Yeah. Red honesty. You'd have to say
well,
that.
It's the first.
We're going to take some of your calls in a moment or two. We'll also be speaking with Ray Houghton ahead of that sort of big moment for Liverpool mm-hmm. Football Club, letting the fans into the new stadium. We've had a look out the window at it. It looks pretty spectacular.
It'll be a good, decent occasion. You know, an interesting one. Leicester will want to come and spoil the party. You know, everybody was... You know, singing their praises about winning the league last year. It's going to be difficult for them this year, they know that. But they'll come here to Anfield at the weekend thinking, let's spoil the party. You know, this is all about, you know, Liverpool and the opening of the new stand and everything else. That'll be difficult. That won't be easy for Liverpool on Saturday.
Stop it. Let's talk about Everton. Let's go to the lines, Radio City Legends, and welcome Ian in Wallasey, who's a Blue. Evening to you, Ian.
Evening.
Right, Ian.
Can I speak to Graham?
Yeah, here he is. Go on.
He's the only one there.
Yeah.
Right, I just think about the transfer window. Mm-hmm. I think Everton have been absolutely fabulous on this transfer window. They got Idris Guy, Balassi, Ashley Williams and Martin Skellenberg and made a profit on the Stones transfer. I know people were looking for a big marquee signing. Well, that's going to save the money and get the right people in later on.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's a good point. I think the ones that he has brought in, you know, have done really well. I think Idris Guy has been excellent. You know, I think the goalkeeper, you know, Stecklenberg, I think he was brought in, personally for me, that he was brought in as going to be understudied to somebody. So, you know, when I think they had the opportunity to bring in Joe Hart, but I think the managers looked at the start that Stecklenberg's had and thought, no, I'm happy with him, you know, up until January at least. And maybe January he might, you know, go in there again and try and get some more players on board. I think everybody, at times, when the new owner came in and Mashiri and all of a sudden, we had this so-called £100 million war chest where I don't know where that came from, but everybody expected to be really, really active in the transfer market. Obviously, the one we've been linked with a lot of players, but nothing really has came to fruition. So, when it boils down to it, yeah, we've done okay. Personally speaking, I think I would have liked to have seen more cover for Romelu Lukaku, who obviously scored 2 goals the other night. But I think we're a little bit light up front. Yeah, he's brought the boy Valencia in, is it, from West Ham?
That's right, yeah.
But I would have liked to have seen, you know, a little bit more cover possibly for Rom, because no disrespect, but Coney's he's done okay in flashes, but I'm not too sure if he's the answer.
Ian, did you want to see this Sissoko lad? They've made some quotes today from Koeman saying they did everything they possibly could to try and get Moussa Sissoko on transfer deadline day.
I actually think it was a panic buy. I think they were looking for a marquee signing on transfer deadline day with Jim. Is it what Jim on Sky television?
Jim White, yeah.
Jim, yeah. And they were trying to do this big deal. I thought Mashiri made a bit of a fool of himself with his quotes. But I think we dodged a bullet on it. I actually do. I've watched him. I don't think he's anything special. He's certainly not a £30 million player.
I just think now, Ian, I just think with the transfer fees that are going around, you know, they're crazy, you know, and this is no disrespect to any of the players, but if you'd have said that Ashley Williams and Balassi would have signed for the prices, you'd have said you'd been mad. But unfortunately, that's the way the world is nowadays, and the prices are really, really inflated. But Sissoko, I agree with you. I liked him as a player, but having heard some of the stories coming out in Newcastle, you know, about how he downed tools and he wasn't interested if he didn't spat his dummy out. You know, maybe we did dodge a bullet in that one. But listen, as you quite rightly said at the beginning of the call, you know, you're more than happy with what we've got brought in. Let's wait and see what it takes us until January.
And we haven't spent a penny, Graham.
No, exactly. And then let's wait and see what happens in January. It's always difficult to bring in people in January. But at least we've got a squad of players now there that hopefully come January time will be up the top reaches of the Premier League.
We will be, Graham, no problem. And you know that big stand they built at Liverpool?
Yeah.
We'll be able to look straight down the docks and see our sparkling new stadium.
No way!
Good call, Ian.
Fantastic, our stand. See you, Ian. Oh, no, he's chuckling to himself now in his kitchen. Let's talk with Phil, who's on the taxi. He's not sure if he's a red or a blue. Evening, Phil. Oh, he's gone missing. Phil's not there.
He's got a fear.
Oh, I'll tell you what, there we go. We found him now.
Hello,
Phil. How are you, Phil?
Hi, buddy. I'm fine, thank you. Can I just talk to Sharpie about a couple of things?
Go on, drill him.
I'm going back to the 80s now. Sharpie.
Go on.
Graham, right, I was going to say to you, do you remember that game at Anfield? Can you remember the one I'm thinking about? That game.
Which one? There was a few.
I would like to reminisce on this one, but listen to you talking to Nicky before. I have to say, that goal you scored at Anfield, do you remember it?
Yes.
Yeah, I was there, mate. Unfortunately, I was there, and it was a cracking goal. And I was on the carpet out, and I was one of the only fans that applauded it. I read,
cheers.
And the dirtiest looks I got, mate, because I actually admired the way you scored that goal, buddy.
Cheers,
I have
Phil.
To say, it hurts me to say so, but cracking goal. And was it Ratcliffe that got the second?
No, it was only 1-0 that day, and that was the I got the goal. And I think Kevin scored in a 2-0 League Cup game or something.
That was the one. Yeah, it was 2-0, wasn't it? Yeah. And also, I was just going to say to you, I was also at the Goodison one when I think you scored a couple of goals, actually, didn't you, when it was 4-4?
Yes, yeah, 4-4 game. That was probably one of the best FA Cup ties that there's ever been, yeah.
And I think... And your final goals.
My final goals, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Stevie mentions it in his book about he got in a hell of a mess with Bruce Grobbelaar.
Yeah, that's right.
And they're both getting a mix up when the ball rolled past, and it was a score from about 6 inches.
It was 30-odd years ago, Graham.
Oh, don't remind me. I'm feeling old.
Hey, Phil, you're not going to the Liverpool game this weekend, are you?
What's up, buddy?
Are you going to the game this weekend at Anfield?
I tell you what, I'm not going to go into too much about this, but I'm very annoyed the way Liverpool Football Club deal with allocation of tickets, because years ago it was easy to get older tickets. Now I can't get a ticket for love nor money, mate. I'd love to go. I've got an 11-year-old son, obviously he's red, and I can't get into any games, mate. It's difficult, so difficult to get older tickets nowadays. So the answer to your question is no, I'm not going, mate. Oh. I'd like to.
Have you tried on the website, no?
Like Sharpie said, website, what's one of them?
Yes. What's Google? What did Saint call Google at the weekend on Satan's Snorts? He called Google, Dave, what was he calling him? Saint was talking about Google, the search engine. He called it a machine. A modern machine. Brilliant.
I've got to agree with Sharpie on that one. I'm not very good. Maybe my 11-year-old son's better than me.
Oh, Phil, thanks for your call anyway.
Cheers,
take care.
Phil.
Hey, one more thing before I go.
Yeah.
The best midfielder ever in the world, John Barnes, by far.
Ooh.
Remember that guy, do you, Sharpie?
Oh, yeah, Barnsley was different class. Brilliant.
He terrorised you a couple of times.
No, I never got that. He was at opposite ends of me. I never saw Barnsley.
Well, you know, he terrorised your team, put it that way.
Oh, he did. He terrorised Snowden.
Good call.
Oh, God, yeah.
Thank you, Phil.
Listen, guys.
Cheers, Phil.
Oh, there you go. He's still talking. I was talking about John Barnes. I said to you before, I passed him in the street before he was swaggering down the street, that John Barnes swagger.
He was brilliant. Looking the best midfield player in the world. I'm not sure about that, but I tell you what, Barnes was brilliant. And he could do anything. He was in his pomp for Liverpool. He was outstanding. Sensational.
Do you want to get a cab that Phil's driving, by the way?
No, you're all right.
He'd be chewing your ear off, wouldn't he?
Only if he takes me home for nothing.
Let's catch up with Reds legend Ray Houghton. Evening to you, Ray.
Evening to you, lads.
Ray, how you doing, sir?
Good. Thanks, Graham.
How much are we looking forward to a different Anfield, Ray? And actually, will it make a difference to the football club?
Well, it should do. I mean, it should bring in income. If you look at other clubs with similar tendencies, you know, it does put them in a better position when it comes to bringing players in. And obviously, you've got more money to spend on the transfer fees and also the wages as well. So it should improve it. And it's going to be great for the fans. You know, fans want to come along. They want to have a good area to go to before the game, and also a nice seat to go and watch the match in as well.
Mm. I mean, 54,000. I presume there's plans ahead to maybe make it even bigger further down the line. I suppose they've just got to see how this works first of all, and you know, see how much the fans enjoy this, see what it means to revenue.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look at how long it's taken to build, it doesn't seem to be too long at all. I think everyone's enjoyed looking at the skyline in Liverpool and seeing, you know, the new stadium or the new stand being built. And I think once it's in place, the others in the other parts of the ground will be looking, we envy. I want our side of the pitch to look like that as well. So it's good times ahead. I'm sure everyone's looking forward to the game against Leicester. You know, Leicester are the league champions, first game at home for Liverpool in the league this season. So, you know, it's going to be a fantastic day, and I'm sure everyone's going to enjoy it.
Ray, too early really to say kind of thing, obviously, about the start. Can you see, I know it's a long way off, can you see Liverpool, I mentioned it to Stevie Nicol before, can you see Liverpool top four this year?
Well, they should be looking at that, Graham, to be honest. You know, they've got no European football. How important is the League Cup and the FA Cup in comparison to getting back to where you want to be? Is competing in the top four, being back in Europe, not just in Europe, but in the Champions League as well. I think that's hugely important, the revenue that that brings, the better players that you can go for as well at the same time. But it's going to be a competitive league, isn't it? We've seen with Manchester United and who they've brought in, and we've seen with Man City, Chelsea with the new manager and the players that he's brought to the club as well. It's going to be difficult this season. And, you know, one of the ones I'd be looking at who's been in there for the last, 19, 20 years is Arsenal.
Yeah.
You know, Arsenal have been in there routinely, but this could be the season if they don't, you know, really start playing better or getting their squad right, then it could be the season that they miss out. So there's a real chance for someone if they can put a good run together. And you look at Chelsea and Liverpool, no European football. You know, they've got none whatsoever. And I know Conte, when he came in, he said that when he took over at Juventus, it was very similar to where he sees Chelsea at the moment, where they were seventh Juventus when they took over. No European football. That season, they won the league. And he's targeting the league this season for Chelsea as well.
Defensively, Ray, do you think Liverpool, obviously, everybody talks about their attacking talent, which was top drawer. But defensively, do you think, obviously, they need to tighten up a little bit, but do you think they're bringing in any more signings in January, maybe to bolster that defence?
Well, I'm surprised they didn't bring in a left-back, which is, for me, Graham, the left-back is a specialist position. Any fullback's a specialist position. It's not just about what you do going forward. It should be what you do defensively, more importantly. I think, the first part of the game should be, can you defend? And the second part of the game is, can you attack? Not the other way around. So I was surprised that Liverpool didn't bring anyone in. Maybe they thought with Gomez, maybe getting back to fitness, that he is someone that could play in that position. And then there's talk of James Milner playing there. I've never been convinced with midfielders that play in the fullback positions, because I think it's a different discipline completely to midfield. So I was slightly surprised at that, but you know, the manager will know what he's got and what he needed. And is he happy with his signings? I would think so. I think Liverpool for the last few seasons had a problem conceding goals. I mean, the season they finished second, when they scored over 100 league goals, they still let in like over 50, I think it was 55 or thereabouts in the league. If you're going for the title, that's far too many. You know, you have to be much more disciplined defensively than that. And I think that is an area. And I just don't mean as a back four or a goalkeeper. I mean, the whole team has to be disciplined when you're defending without the ball. Make sure you all get back into good positions to see off the danger.
Boys, I know the discipline has changed, and Ray mentioned it then, but a question from Bob on social media. Do you think there are any fullbacks, right or left, in the Premier League who are better than Stevie Nicol? He was obviously listening to Stevie Nicol before. I know the discipline has changed, but I think Bob's question is, you know, has there been a dearth of sort of players in that position, in either position, left or right, for 20 years, 20 plus years?
Well, for me, you know, Stevie, obviously playing with Stevie, I know how good he was. And by the way, Stevie could attack, but he knew his defensive duties as well. You know, he was a good reader of the game, good passer of the ball. He was a tenacious player, won his challenges, good in the air. But what he does, or did, more so than what I see with fullbacks today, he actually could head the ball. You don't really see too many fullbacks that are good headers of the ball. You know, attack the back post. You know, when the balls are coming in and they can, you know, get up there, and if the centre forward's coming in, you know, they can be, you know, very effective in that area of the field. You know, you do see with fullbacks today that, you know, when the ball comes in there, anyone gets above them, they're virtually going to have a header on target, because, you know, what they're looking for is to keep the coming catch, and they're looking to run out already to try and start an attack, whether steady staying in your position. But that was where Stevie was so good. I don't like, you know, personally, trying to say, is there players better today than there was 20 years ago? Because it was a different game. You know, football's changed, it's moved on, you know, and that's no threat, any fault with the players. That's the way coaching's going, that's the way management's going. You know, look at Joe Hart at Man City. He can't get a game. He's had to move to Torino because the manager doesn't think he's good enough with the ball at his feet, or supposedly with the ball at his feet. So that's how football's changed, you know. So, you know, you need this different abilities now for a fullback. And now what managers look for is, how good are you when you get in the advanced positions, and how good can you deliver the balls into the box?
Ray, thank you very much for your company this evening.
Cheers, Ray.
Cheers, lads. All the best. Okay. Cheers, Graham. All the best.
Ray Houghton there. Right, 9:23. Radio City, and it's just been you.
Yeah.
Hasn't been that bad, has it?
Good. Two great lads as well. You know,
yeah, Ray, they're brilliant,
Ray,
aren't they?
Yeah, and Stevie Nicol, really good lads. You know, really good players.
Dave said it's the best show we've ever done. We should can Aldo.
Well, it's just sad that you can't get an ex-Liverpool player here, and Dave and I are having to hold the fort again. It's frightening.
Hold the fort. He's off to watch Sunderland on Monday night. Yeah, he's even ditching the show next. I don't know. His love of Everton is taking him to the North East. I tell you what, I've only missed one.
But we're looking forward to the weekend. Big game at Anfield, obviously, a new stand, which will be a great occasion. And obviously, Everton going up to the Stadium of Light on Monday to do battle with David Moyes once again. So it should be interesting.
Okay, I was just trying to see whether Sean Heidel and the football team won earlier today. Did you watch it or not?
No, but what was...
This was in the Paralympics I'm talking about.
Sean Heidel, what was the team?
Former Liverpool Academy player.
No, I had him when I was manager at Bangor City.
Did you?
He was a midfielder.
What
player.
A lovely lad. Yeah, I can't find whether they won or not.
What a tenacious midfield player.
They were playing Brazil.
Liverpool fan, but what a tenacious midfield player.
Good footballer. Good lad.
Good footballer. I didn't say he was a good lad. He was a good footballer.
Sharpie, thank you very much. Steve Nicholls joining me tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock on Radio City Talk for another half hour. More of him then. Legends back on Monday.